This is the Nordic News.
Greetings, comrades. These are the news of the Nordic nation. This is a news broadcast produced by members of the Nordic Resistance Movement. The following is a gathering of different news items translated from our websites during the week gone by, and we are talking week 31 of the current year, 2017. And we'll start off with the news of women arranging festivals for women. The municipality of Falkenberg arranges a women-only music festival. After last year's record increase when it comes to sexual harassment and rapes in festivals all around Sweden, the feminist Emma Knyckare has hatched a genius plan to arrange a festival free from men. According to feminist logic, the common nominator for the perpetrators is simply that they are men. It is a so-called male problem. Christian Fanar, who works as a destination developer at Falkenberg Municipality, was really enthusiastic when he heard about the idea and contacted Knyckare. I have followed the debate regarding Knyckare's idea about a festival free from men, and I thought it was an exciting thing all the way, says Fanar. Fanar doesn't see a problem with banning men from attending music festivals, but does see a problem in that the festival might be deemed discriminatory, and therefore might be denied permission to be arranged. He compares a festival free from men with a women's sports competition where only women are allowed to participate. Yes, let's arrange a music festival free from racial strangers. Racial stranger sentenced for the murder of his Swedish girlfriend. Yesterday, Timothy Combrecht, who from all appearances seemed to be of mixed heritage, mulatto, was sentenced to 14 years in prison for the murder of 19-year-old Victoria Ernberg. Except for the jail time, the murderer will pay a fine of 50,000 Swedish kronor to Victoria's mother and her sister. The murder was committed in December last year. The Swedish tabloid Expressen described the violence in the following way. Timothy Combrecht stabbed and cut Victoria 21 times, subjected her to blunt force and some sort of strangulation before he finally killed her by slitting her throat. Afterwards, Combrecht tried to dismember the body, but failed, and instead lit the apartment on fire and escaped through a window. The district court suggests that an adult person would have been sentenced to life in prison, but they couldn't sentence Combrecht to longer time than 14 years because he was 20 years of age when committing the murder last year. I am satisfied with 14 years. He can't get any more. But of course, I would have wished for more, Victoria's mother says to Expressen. The background for the murder is that Victoria had a relationship with her killer. This even though she knew that Combrecht in all his life had had problems with violence and aggression, as well as a drug problem. The criminal case states that it seems like the relationship was breaking up, citing that a neighbor had heard Victoria scream at Combrecht that, "You do not drag me down and hit me anymore." Victoria had also looked for a new single apartment and had written a note to Combrecht where she threatened that the relationship would end in case he did not deal with his misuse of alcohol. According to a mental evaluation by the criminal authorities, Combrecht is deemed not mentally ill, but he has a lifelong disorder with aggressiveness, and during the time he had been in custody at an asylum for the criminally insane, he has carved swastikas on the door of his cell. So, he's our guy now, is he? The Swedish Armed Forces continue to promote the gay lobby. Last Monday, the annual decadent festival known as Pride started in Stockholm. And the Swedish Armed Forces, the Swedish Defense University, and the Swedish Defense Recruitment Agency were all present to take a stance for the so-called LGBTQ issues. A Facebook post published by the Swedish Armed Forces during the day faced criticism from several people, but the SAF defended the post with the following comment: "We shall mirror the society that we have the duty to protect," said Claes Axell, the HR manager of the SAF. The post facing the attention seems to have been deleted the same evening, following a widespread criticism. Some of the critique, among others, were: "You should be warriors. Have you forgotten that in the fog of rainbows?" And: "I mistakenly thought that the duty of the Swedish armed forces was to defend the borders of this nation." And: "LGBTQ colored activism is totalitarian. One can clearly notice." Sadly, we see that, same as last year, that we get this kind of reactions when we take a stance and communicate with our focus on pride. But we don't give up because of this, says Excel. And we won't give up either. We will push and push until you are in the gutter. The homo lobby demonstrated against Nazism. Two Norwegian youth associations arranged a so-called counter-demonstration after the Nordic Resistance Movement held a demonstration against the perverse and folk-hostile homo lobby in Kristiansand, Norway. The arranger for the counter-demonstration was Dennis Torkelsen, who is the leader in his country for the Social Democratic Youth Association. But Torkelsen had not checked what the Nordic Resistance Movement demonstration was about. Instead, he only rambled the same old meaningless buzzwords when he was interviewed by NRK, Norwegian state media. He said, among other things, how the resistance movement only stands for hate and that the homo lobby stands for love. "We must show the love, but they show their hate. That is what it's about, that we fight for an open society where everyone is allowed to be what they are. We must show that we are bigger than them and that love is the greatest." There were also representatives for the home organization FRI Sør present, as well as some other parties' youth associations. Molly Sterno from the Socialist Leftist Party critiqued the police in their speech and questioned if they could guarantee the safety for the participants in the coming gay festival, Gay Sørlandtager. Steiro didn't mention that the Nordic Resistance Movement's demonstration went peacefully by and that the only violence was provided by the counter-demonstrators. IT leak aftermath. The entire board of the transport agency is replaced. Thomas Eneroth stated, after 1 week as Sweden's new Minister of Infrastructure, that it's been decided to replace the entire board of the Swedish Transport Agency. The decision was made after the infamous security leak, where sensitive information was leaked to foreign powers. That happened within the agency. The event led to the Alliance parties demanding that three ministers would resign: the former Minister of Infrastructure, Anna Johansson, the former Minister of National Affairs, Anders Ygeman, and the current Minister of Defense, Peter Hultqvist. The demand grounds in all three of them having knowledge of the security leak, but choosing not to act on it. Both Johansson and Ygeman quickly resigned, but the Prime Minister Stefan Löfven decided that Hultqvist was to stay at his post, something that the Alliance wasn't very fond of, and has instead declared that they would continue with their vote of no confidence against Hultqvist later this autumn. A vote of no confidence is when a number of MPs in the Swedish Parliament declare that they don't trust a minister's capacity to do their job. The minister, or the entire government if the Prime Minister is target, is forced to resign if the declaration gets enough support. During the Thursday, when Eneroth stated the decision to replace the transport agency's board, he said, "When I became minister, I called the general director immediately and the chairman of the board." He also said, We give the transport agency the mission themselves to map the information that has been checked by non-secure personnel and which information is security sensitive. This will be presented before January 2018. Multicultural violence has once again hit firefighters. During Thursday night, the firefighters in Uddevalla were alarmed about three different fires, which turned out to be traps, as they were attacked by youth gangs who threw stones at them after they had put out the fires. There's a few burning pallets on a walking bridge. When we're about to pack up after we've put out the fire, a bunch of stones come hurling towards us. We immediately jump into the car and leave the area, says Matthias Bergenheim. After that, the youths lit a car on fire in a nearby area that the firefighters had to be dispatched to as well, but they weren't attacked. In this case, there were so many people moving around near the car, so I think that's why we weren't exposed to stone throwing there, says Bergenheim. During Monday, the police were also exposed to stone throwing in the multicultural area, after they had been tricked there by a youth gang. We have a work hypothesis that they try to trick us into the area so that they can throw stones at us, says Thomas Foxbury, press manager at the police in the region west, and continues, they only hit the plates on the car, but they're also bypassing driver had a side panel crushed and got glass splinters over himself. But other than that, there weren't any injuries. Police taking fingerprints on the resistance movement's barrier tape. In April 2016, the police got an alarm after a guard found a barrier tape from the Nordic resistance movement at an asylum center in Kungälv. In the report, it is written that the guard said that they've taped the entire building. They've got plastic bands precisely as we have here at the police, but instead of police, it is their logotype, the T-Rune, said the police press manager Tommy Nyman back then. The police then used a large amount of resources to finding the perpetrator, and after taking fingerprints, they've now succeeded in identifying one person, and a preliminary investigation for harassment of group has been started, where one person is suspect. We've sent the tape for evidence checking at the NFC, National Forensic Centra, in Linköping. They looked for fingerprints and got a match on one person, says Niklas Hed, who is the leader of the investigation in Kungälv. They also used the activist report and the pictures that were sent to Nordfront for tracking the guilty ones. The activist report read, on the night of the 23rd of the 4th, two members and one sympathizer went out to Torslanda to symbolically block a soon-to-be home for alone-coming refugee children. Then they continued to Kungälv to block an already established occupation base. The police will now hold an interrogation with the identified perpetrator. Oh my god, it's like another show. Jewish blogger wants to map political opponents. In a letter to the editor that was published during Tuesday in the Norwegian newspaper VG, the Jewess Susanne Abel expressed her wish that people who participate in demonstrations organized by the resistance movement should be mapped and registered. Abel starts her very aggressive article by comparing the resistance movement's demonstration in Kristiansand with pedophiles who demonstrate for their right to abuse children. An absurd comparison that says a lot about Abel's view of National Socialism. An ironic one as well, considering that one part of the resistance movement's critique against the Homo lobby has its ground in their sexualization and indoctrination of children, as well as their connection to pedophilia. Her comparison becomes even more ironic if one considers the Homo lobby's Jewish roots. Abel thinks that the resistance movement should be allowed to hold demonstrations, but not because of free speech, but because it gives her the occasion she wants to map political dissidents. She writes in her article,
I want a fucking list! Map the neo-Nazis! Document who they are! Create profiles!
She also writes that she doubts that the Norwegian security police, the PST, can handle the job. She doesn't mention who she believes would manage the political surveillance in Norway instead. Except for trying to connect the Nordic resistance movement to the Islamic group the Prophet Ummah, she also goes to attack against the BDS movement, a campaign founded in 2005 with the purpose of putting economical and political pressure on Israel for their treatment of the Palestinians. Abel means that the movement is anti-Semitic and that it therefore should be forbidden from demonstrating.
I also want the BDS movement that wants to boycott Israel denied, because I honestly think that they're anti-Semitic. But they aren't denied.
Even if the message in the article is masked to look like a defense of free speech, it is clear that the article's real meaning is to scare potential sympathizers from participating in future demonstrations through opinion registers. She ends the article with an indirect threat towards everyone who might participate in one of the demonstrations in the future that she dislikes.
Had one of those fuckers lived in my block, I would have known about it. It's good to know.
And the following is a statement from Håkan Forvold, the Norwegian leader of the Nordic Resistance Movement. And it's kind of a story of how history was written in Norway last week. It is with a combination of both jubilation and exhaustion that I report on the Nordic Resistance Movement's extremely successful demonstration in Kristiansand. As you likely already know, we originally planned to hold our protest against the state's promotion of homosexuality in Fredrikstad, but after the police abruptly proscribed the event at the last moment, we were forced to change our plans. The ban and the police's reasoning behind it came as a great surprise to us. We expected resistance from the counter-protesters and the system. As we anticipated the police to give special treatment to the homosexual lobby, but we did not expect that the system would use the threats of violence from leftist terrorists as an excuse to ban our activities. In fact, even the Oslo police, renowned lawyers and freedom of speech experts, newspapers and commentators, and some members of our opposition agreed that such a step was a surprise. We considered holding the demonstration in Fredrikstad in spite of the police decision. However, we soon dismissed the idea as counterproductive. Our mission was to promote our message and the policies and to speak with the local people, something that would have been impossible if there had been mass arrests and trouble with counter-demonstrators. Nevertheless, we were determined that the demonstration would go ahead. For practicality's sake, this meant that we had to plan it under the radar, as we now knew the system would commit a great deal of resources to prevent its success. This was underlined by disgraceful arrests of some of our Swedish activists the day before the protests. Several alternative sites were proposed for a new location. Oslo was one possibility, but seeing as the government is busily monitoring our activists in eastern Norway, we decided holding a demonstration there might prove difficult at short notice. So instead, we chose Kristiansand, a city in which we have strong following and a great support among the local people. Organizing the relocation of the protest went well. We issued an official statement to our members, informing them that they shouldn't travel to Fredrikstad due to the change of location, and because we wouldn't be able to guarantee their safety. As I am based in Ludvika, Sweden, I went off on a Friday, the day before the event. We chose a less busy route into Norway in order to avoid the more controlled border crossings. This proved to be a smart move, as several other activists were stopped and arrested elsewhere. Once we had gotten a fair way into Norway, a police van that had been lying in wait started trailing us. It followed us half an hour or so, and then turned off and wasn't seen again. By the time we arrived at our destination, It was about 3 a.m. We were happy to see that a lot of people had made it there, including activists from Norway, Sweden and Finland. Whether we would be able to accomplish anything the next day, however, was still unclear. And that uncertainty didn't diminish in the morning when I woke up to the sound of a helicopter flying over the roof. After sharing a few coffees with the fellow activists over breakfast, we had a quick rundown on the schedule. Meanwhile, a separate group went down to Kristiansand city center to assess the situation and see if police were waiting for us there. We then went together to a rendezvous point and met with the rest of our comrades who had traveled that day and gone there directly. However, we'd only had time to unroll our flags when a bunch of police cars immediately convened on our location. That convinced us to go quickly to the city center to ensure that no one was arrested and the demonstration stopped. We brought our leaflets and flags, but unfortunately, because of our need of haste, the megaphone was left in the car. This was why we couldn't make any loudspeaker announcements on our way into the town, and why no speeches were held when we got there. Our march into the city center went well, as did our dialogue with the police. They explained that they wouldn't attempt to stop us, and that we could carry out our activism. We said that we planned to give out the leaflets and talk with passers-by, which they informed us wouldn't be a problem. We subsequently had lots of interesting conversations with people in the city. We took part in interviews with the press, including a live interview with TV2, state media. Up to 1,000 leaflets were given out, and our goal of bringing to light the insidious nature of the homosexual lobby was unequivocally achieved. One or two rabid counter-demonstrators inevitably couldn't help themselves from causing trouble. This didn't adversely affect our protest. We spoke frankly with a few opponents, with us putting forward our views, and they theirs. Hopefully they were able to see that we weren't just homophobic Nazis, but National Socialists with well-founded arguments as to why we oppose the harmful promotion of homosexual propaganda. After finishing the demonstration, we went back to our cars and the police carried out their inevitable ID inspection of all our members. Most people might think that the registration of political dissidents is something that only happens in countries like North Korea, but I am sad to report it is customary practice in the democratic Norway as well. As expected, a huge media circus followed in the wake of our demonstration. Hypocritical counter-demonstrators, including treacherous politicians, whined to the fake media about the police letting us exercise our constitutional right to freedom of expression. They didn't accept the police's reasoning that they were protecting the right to demonstrate, or that they were attempting to ensure that the situation of the day didn't escalate. Instead, they complained that no group should further their message through threats of violence, even though the Nordic resistance movement has of course never engaged in such behavior. In reality, it is we who are frequently on the receiving end of such threats, such as those that caused the cancellation of our demonstration in Fredrikstad. Unsurprisingly, there were plenty of lies published about the day's activities as well, mostly from self-avowed counter-demonstrators that the fake media portrayed as regular people in the city. These include claims that we would pay violent visits to people's homes, that we spat on immigrants, and that the local population felt scared. All of these were, of course, untrue. History was written. The process of preparing and organizing the Fredrikstad demonstration, then having to switch our operations to Kristiansand shortly thereafter, has given us a great deal of important experience. It's vital that we as an organization reflect on what we have done well as what we've done poorly, and where we can improve. It all helps to make the next demonstration even better. In summation, the 29th of July was a great success for the Nordic resistance movement and marks the day on which we wrote ourselves into the history books. The event was covered by the entire Norwegian media, as well as the outlets in Sweden and abroad. Not just once, but in article after article. The attention from it was huge. Our website traffic is at an all-time high, and fresh applicants from people wanting to get involved are rolling in. The 29th of July was the day that the Nordic Resistance Movement defied the system's attempt to silence us. It was the day that we carried out the organization's biggest ever demonstration on Norwegian soil, and the first time a national socialist demonstration was held in modern Norway. In short, history was written. I want to thank all the participants for a fantastic day. It was an honor to stand with you on the streets of Kristiansand. Hail victory! And that is all we had for you this week. Our thanks go out to the diligent translators who made this project possible, and also to the listeners who show their support by pitching in financially. If you are interested in donating and to aid in our struggle, you can do so by following the links posted in the show notes. Stay strong, comrades, and stay brave, and join us next week for another briefing on the events in the Nordic nation. Hail victory!